Good afternoon, may it please the court. I'm Carrie Ann Lucas, bar number 36620, and I counsel for Ms. S.S.H. With me at council table is Rima Perry, bar number 22433. She's counsel for Mr. R.H. I'll be arguing today. Unless there are specific questions about Mr. R.H., and Ms. Perry will be addressing those, and we'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. S.S.H. and Mr. R.H. were not provided with reasonable efforts to reunify with their sons. The Denver Department of Human Services never made referrals required in their treatment plan and never provided accommodations to Ms. SSH for her disability. Here, to find reasonable efforts were made without ensuring that the parent was provided with reasonable accommodations and modifications conflicts with the clear purpose of the Americans with Disabilities Act. A court could find no accommodations are required for a wheelchair user, and the visitation could be up a flight of stairs and could come around to termination. The parent could be found to have never attended visitation. And under both the department's and the guardian ad litem's interpretation of the TV case, that would be acceptable. Likewise, a deaf parent could attend a parenting class without an interpreter. That having an interpreter provided could not then would be unable to learn from the class, could then reach termination of parental rights and have parental rights terminated on the basis that the parent did not improve their parenting skills in the parenting class. And that too would be okay under the interpretation of the TV case that's put forth by the county and the guardian ad litem. Right now, disabled parents.
Excuse me, I have a question. The treatment plan for mother appears to call for individualized parenting instruction. I didn't really see anything in the record talking about what that was or whether that occurred, and maybe you could point me to that, or maybe Denver as well could address that.
There was a request for that, in particular specialized services, and there was a record made that in the prior dependency and neglect case, if the mother received specialized services, and that was made on the record by the county at the termination hearing. But those services were not offered to the parent during this case. All that was offered was the standard visitation at the Denver Department of Human Services. And what's notable here is that the caseworker admitted himself he had no training in working with parents with intellectual disabilities, so even the caseworker could not evaluate whether those services were appropriate for the parent or not. So what we have here is that people with disabilities, parents with disabilities, have a right under the Americans with Disabilities Act, but don't have a remedy in child protection cases. And that's not the intent of Congress. So the TV case holds that the Americans with Disabilities Act is not a defense to termination of parental rights. However, the ADA requires reasonable accommodations and reasonable modifications. And when I refer to the ADA, I'm also referring also to the Rehabilitation Act, which has similar provisions. But specifically, with respect to the TB case, unlike the parent in TB who, from the decision, appears to have argued that the ADA had a wholesale defense to termination on behalf of parents with disabilities, a defense to termination of parental rights could not occur. We disagree with that. But in order for termination of parental rights to occur with a parent with a disability, first, there has to be the provision of reasonable accommodations and reasonable modifications. And that's because the Americans with Disabilities Act does apply to everything a public entity does. And ensuring that reasonable accommodations and reasonable modifications occurs as part of a treatment plan. And in the analysis of whether or not reasonable efforts occur, that does not place the rights of a parent over that of a child. It's simply one of the factors that need to be considered when addressing whether or not reasonable efforts occur. And the Department of Justice and Health and Human Services letter is instructive in this instance. And in the DOJ, which really has the greatest understanding of Title II, relied upon the Yeski Supreme Court decision. And the Yeski Supreme Court decision was not addressed in the TV decision, and it was not addressed in any of the decisions that the TV case relied upon, nor was it cited in any of the decisions that either the Department or the Guardian ad litem cited in their responses to our petition. And some of those cases occurred before the YESCI decision came out. The YESCI decision was was a fairly new decision at the time that the 2D case was decided. But the YESCI decision holds that anything a public entity does is covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act, and the statute is quite broad, and that is the intent of Congress. And so public entities like the Denver Department of Human Services in the state of Colorado are required to make reasonable modifications to policies, practices, and procedures, and they're required to do those modifications whenever it's necessary to ensure that a parent who has a disability has a full and equal opportunity to reunify with their child. And there's nothing in the statutory phrase reasonable modification to suggest that Congress intended to exclude modifications in the context of a termination of parental rights proceeding. If Congress had intended to limit it in that way, it would have been clear in the language. When Congress limited the scope of the ADA, it did so explicitly. It did so when limiting the definition of an individual with a disability. It did so when limiting the applicability of Title I, which is the employment section, to small employers. It only applies to employers of 15 or more. So when Congress wanted to limit the ADA, it did so explicitly. So if termination of parental rights cases were insulated from Title II's mandate simply because they involve child protection, state law would serve as an obstacle to the full accomplishment and execution of the purposes and objectives of Congress in enacting Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and that would violate the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution. And that insulation would be far from providing the clear and comprehensible national mandate for the elimination of discrimination against individuals with disabilities. And the Americans with Disabilities Act would be powerless to work in the context of termination of parental rights proceedings. And this is similar to how the Indian Child Welfare Act works. It requires active efforts before terminating, among other things, before terminating parental rights. And likewise, the Americans with Disabilities Act requires reasonable efforts before terminating, requires accommodations and modifications in the process of providing reasonable efforts before terminating parental rights. And here, Ms. SSH was denied a full opportunity to reunify with her son because Denver Department of Human Services failed to provide reasonable accommodations and modifications to ensure that all these services were accessible to her.
Is that a finding of fact that needs to be made in this case, Ms. Lucas, or is that an issue of law?
I believe it should be a finding of fact that should be made in these cases. I think the law requires that, and it's one part of the analysis of reasonable efforts when there is a parent with a disability. And what that specific finding of fact is will depend very much on the individual's disabilities. If it's a parent with an intellectual disability, did they receive the specialized instruction that they need for parenting education? Were they referred to specialized services? Like here, the evaluator for the substance abuse evaluator said that had she known of Ms. SSH's intellectual disability, she would have referred her to a different provider. And that was information that was known to the intake caseworker and should have been known to the ongoing caseworker who did testify, who read her psychological evaluation, which was done in the first dependency in that case, which provided extensive information about Ms. SSH's intellectual disability.
So here's my follow-up question for you then. If it's a question of fact, we're not able to make determinations of fact on appeal, obviously, and it sounds like you'd be arguing for a remand of the trial court?
I'm not arguing for remand for the trial court to make further findings of fact on this issue.
And that doesn't supersede your arguments on the other bases either, apparently.
No, it doesn't.
And Ms. Lucas, following up on that, assuming that some services weren't provided to the mother that should have been provided, with consideration of the impact of the ADA, what about father?
There's still the issue of the reasonable efforts for father. and for both parents, in that the parent-child interactional referral was never done. There was an initial referral made, but then a restraining order was put in place in a criminal case that meant that the parents could not have the parent-child interactional with both children. And a new referral needed to go in for a parent-child interactional for the one child. And that never occurred. And the parent-child interactional was ordered at the very first hearing at the shelter hearing. It was ordered again as part of the dispositional hearing. And then it was ordered, and then it was requested again at the time the termination motion was filed. That was requested again, and yet it was never completed. And the caseworker testified that the parent-child interactional was critical for determining what services these parents needed to rectify the issues that brought them before the court, which was there was concerns about excessive discipline and physical abuse of the children. And the division of this court did note in the SMB case that the services in the case plan and the treatment plan shall be available and provided as determined necessary and appropriate by individual case plan, quoting 19.3.208.2b.4.d.5 in the SMB case. And that's a mandatory shall. And the failure to provide that service means reasonable efforts to reunify this family simply did not occur, because that was a critical component for determining what services were necessary to rectify the problems that this family had. So we are asking that you remand this case, and I'd like to reserve the remainder time for rebuttal if you have no further questions.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Laura Pozada-Geitzen, and I'm the Assistant City Attorney in Denver, registration number 14599, and I'm here on behalf of the Denver Department of Human Services. Notwithstanding the arguments to the contrary, some of which were very creative and intriguing, the department would suggest and submit that this case is a rather straightforward case. It is not as complicated as it has been made out to be, and the department would further argue that with regard to the Americans with Disabilities Act, Mother has not preserved that issue for appeal because she did not raise it below. She did not raise it at any time in the trial court proceeding. She didn't raise it in her closing argument at trial, giving the trial court an opportunity to address that issue.
Oh, counsel, hypothetically, Let's assume it was then raised. Is the Denver's position that the ADA does apply in the reasonable effort standards, or doesn't?
Does not. While certainly this division doesn't have to follow the holding in a fellow division's case, the case of TB has been decided, and in that case, the panel did determine that the ADA it does not constitute a defense in a termination of parental rights proceeding. That being said, the department certainly recognizes that when you have a parent who has been provided with a treatment plan, the department does have an obligation to provide reasonable efforts to rehabilitate that parent's unfitness and provide those services in an effort to rehabilitate and reunify the family.
Well, Ms. Iverson, here the mother did alert the department that she had disabilities and needed special help. Isn't that right?
That's correct, but I think that goes to the issue of reasonable efforts and not whether the Americans with Disability Act applies. And in this case, what I think has to be pointed out is that the treatment plan itself was an appropriate one. It addressed the issues that brought the family before the court, and it was through mother's actions, or more pointedly, her inaction, that resulted in termination of her parental rights.
Well, some of the services recommended by the court weren't provided.
Your Honor, I would suggest that visitation was made available to mother. In the visitation, with regard to the visitation component, mother was able to have, or at least could have had, one-on-one parenting instruction and assistance through both of the visitation supervisors. But she failed to appear for visitation for the first couple of months that the case was open, and she was only entitled to visit with the younger child because of the no contact order that had been entered in the criminal case. Towards the end of the case, when Mr. King was supervising visits, she only attended 3 out of 11. So by failing to come to the visit, she wasn't able to benefit from any instruction that the supervisors could have provided. With regard to father,
Isn't there an explanation of that, Ms. Iveson, that she didn't understand them? And therefore, you know, she couldn't take instruction when it wasn't provided to her in a way that would compensate for her disability.
Well, Your Honor, I think what happened in this case is that mother, for whatever reason, didn't follow through with significant components of the treatment plan. In addition to not coming to as many visits as possible, and I don't believe the testimony really was that mother didn't know how to interact per se, but more that she was very inconsistent in attending visits. Mother did attend and complete the signal substance abuse evaluation. Looking at the report itself, it's fairly clear that mother understood what was expected of her. She talked about her substance abuse history. She talked about at the termination hearing how she needed to get her drug habit under control. She seemed amenable to accepting treatment. Yet when Arapaho House contacted her, father answered the phone once and he didn't take a message. Arapaho House left a voicemail for mother. She didn't reply. She never followed through with treatment. Had she come to the Arapaho House intake evaluation, it was more than likely that a referral would have been made to a dual diagnosis treatment provider, which would have been able to address her cognitive issues as well as her mental health issues. But she never followed through.
Well, isn't part of the problem here that there was a change in caseworkers? And the second caseworker just didn't pick up on everything that was in the file?
You know, I'm not sure. I don't believe that is the real issue in this case. I think the real issue...
Well, that certainly happened, didn't it?
It did happen to a certain extent, but at the same time, when referrals were made initially, mother did not follow through. She never went to the mental health evaluation as she was required to do. By failing to even attend the evaluation, there was no ability on the part of the department to proceed further and get the services that she needed in order to become a fit parent. This is also the fourth case for mother with regard to dependency and neglect issues. The first case resulted in termination of her parental rights. She also received multiple services over the course of approximately 5 years, dating back to 2009, with only a gap of 7 months after both of these children were reunified with the parents, and jurisdiction was terminated. 7 months later, we were back in court with the older child, who was only 4 and a half at the time of the termination hearing, Arnold C.H., presenting at a doctor's appointment with significant bruising to his neck, his chest, his entire right arm. So the services that were specifically addressing her cognitive deficits, those services were provided through the Hope Initiative, through Dr. Callis, through Guadalupe Project, in the prior cases, apparently did not result in rendering her a fit parent. In this case, she never got to the point of following up or even completing some of the evaluations or following up and trying to, work on her treatment issues with an appropriate treatment provider. One of the other issues in this case is that we had a no contact order entered in the criminal case. That resulted in both parents not being able to even visit with the older child. So they had not seen him for almost a year by the time of the termination hearing. During that time period, the children had been in foster care and were really making remarkable progress. Mother and father's argument that the lack of a parent-child interactional evaluation rendered the reasonable efforts void in essence is not supported by the record. I don't believe that they point to anything really that shows that had a parent-child interactional evaluation been performed as to the younger child, the outcome in this case would have been any different. There was the failure to follow through with evaluations with the respondent father. He did undergo a mental health evaluation early, in the, relatively early in the case, but then it took him several months before he started to get into treatment. At that point, he was even inconsistent then. He too was inconsistent with visitation. With regard to the treatment plan that was adopted, it did address each of the deficits that the parents presented with, and that had they been complied with by the parents, possibly could have been successful. It's unknown in this case, in the sense, because neither parent really made the effort to comply with the components of the treatment plan. With regard to the less drastic alternatives issue, in this case, we had two very young children, and the trial court was more than justified in determining and finding that there was no less drastic alternative that would have served the children's best interests. Both children had been out of the home for a year, so, and we had, this was an EPP case, and the children were doing very well. The individual that was presented as a possible less drastic alternative determination, both parents had determined was not an appropriate candidate for consideration. In this case, the department would argue that the treatment plan that was provided and adopted with the parents was appropriate, that the efforts made by the department were reasonable, and the trial court's finding to that effect was supported by the record. The trial court's final determination that termination was in the best interest of the children was likewise supported by the record, and we would request that the court affirm the trial court's order terminating the respective parental rights as to both of these parents.
Counsel, can I ask you, did the trial court make any findings relative to the ADA specifically?
No, the court did not, and I think that's because the no party presented that issue to the court for its consideration.
Well, nor did the trial court make any findings with respect to whether the services offered were sufficient in light of her disability, regardless of the application of the ADA.
You know, I think the court did find that the department made reasonable efforts to work with the family and to provide services.
Yes.
But with mother's failure to follow through with even completing an evaluation and then completing the one evaluation but not following through with recommended treatment, the department could not act further in trying to obtain services that would have taken into account her disability. And the guardian ad litem would like to address that as well.
May it please the court. Harold Sloan of Rocky Mountain Children's Law Center as guardian ad litem for the minor children, registration number 44997. Your Honors, I'm here today to request that the Court of Appeals affirm the trial court's decision that termination of parental rights was in the best interest of the children. There are a few areas I would like to discuss, and I'd like to start with the American with Disabilities Act. I think the concern about the findings of the trial court are well placed. In order to preserve an objection at the trial level and bring it up to the Court of Appeals, the court has found, and the Supreme Court of Colorado has found in Martinez v. Peeble, that a litigant must make specific objections calling the court's attention to the specific issue at hand in order for the trial court to deal with it directly and preserve the record for the appellate court. In this case, the ADA, or the fact that the mother alleges that she is a qualified individual with a disability, was never addressed to the trial court, thus waiving any argument at the Court of Appeals. The first time that argument was directly addressed was in the brief submitted to the Court of Appeals. The case of CYFD versus New Mexico from the New Mexico Court of Appeals takes this test a bit further and states that litigants requiring to use the ADA must invoke that they would like a specific remedy under the ADA and that they are a qualified individual. Now, that's non-binding in this jurisdiction. However, I think it does help illustrate what other courts are requiring litigants to do if they wish to preserve an objection. In this case, this mother never made a specific record about the ADA, her individual disability, or how she would qualify, and thus, in my opinion, waiving that argument to this court. However, if this court would choose to consider the ADA, I would offer that the ADA is indeed not a defense under the case of TB. TB states that the Department of Human Services is subject to the ADA. Nobody here disputes that. However, the ADA does have a separate remedy contained in its own text. The Supreme Court of Hawaii dove deep into the ADA to check the legislative history and the text itself, and found that nowhere in the ADA or the legislative history is there any indication that the ADA was ever meant to be inserted into a state claim and provided a separate remedy. There is still a remedy in this case. No matter what happens in this dependency and neglect case, the respondent mother can still file a claim under the ADA in district court.
Mr. Sloan, assuming that that's absolutely correct, that the ADA is not offensive, but would it nevertheless be appropriate to remand for findings to be made whether, with taking into consideration the ADA, whether the kind of services were suitable for mother's disability?
And I believe the answer to that question, Your Honor, is that, in essence, the ADA is asking us to make sure that the services put in place for a parent are particular and fit their needs specifically. Now I would direct this court to 19.1.103, parentheses 10, the definition of an appropriate treatment. An appropriate treatment plan is one that is tailored and calculated to render that particular respondent fit to provide adequate parenting to the child. I think that addresses the concern raised by Mother's Counsel that there are numerous scenarios where a parent may not be able to get appropriate services if they can't go upstairs if they are deaf. However, if that were the case, then the court would have a very difficult time squaring that with the definition of appropriate treatment plan. And in this case, the trial court found that there was an appropriate treatment plan. And the standard for reviewing such a finding comes from the case of CAK, which is the Supreme Court of Colorado, en banc, finding that the trial court's ruling should stand unless there is no evidence in the record to support that. In our briefs, and in the briefs, in the trial court's record, there is evidence to support that her treatment plan was appropriate, notwithstanding that ADA's the concerns being raised by the respondent mother in regards to the ADA after the fact. I would ask this court to find that the ADA was not properly preserved, and in the alternative, that it's still not a defense to termination of parental rights. I believe my time is up. If the court has any further questions, I certainly will field them.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
As noted in the letter finding from the Department of Justice, the ADA legislative history, in fact, does have record that it was intended to address the parental rights and the issues that parents face in having their parental rights challenged by the state, and that is cited in the letter of finding. There were several instances of specific testimony, including by that of Justin Dart, in the legislative history that is cited in that.
Ms. Lucas, would you respond to Mr. Sloan's suggestion that any argument about the application of the ADA, either as a defense or as a touchstone for consideration of the services provided to mom, was waived because it just wasn't raised?
There was significant testimony elicited throughout the hearing on the issue of accommodations for mom and her disability and the individuals who are providing services. For example, the substance abuse evaluator testified that the referral to Arapahoe Home House was inappropriate. She would have referred to a different agency had she known about Ms. SSH's intellectual disability. It was raised throughout the hearing. It was not raised on closing, in large part because the court limited closing to such a limited amount. The parties only received 4 minutes for closing, so it significantly limited the ability to address issues on closing. After a two-day hearing, only 4 minutes of closing before that time. But the issue was adequately preserved in that the court had the evidence before it to make that determination. The Department of Justice has, and when looking at the issue of remedies, a parent cannot go to district court and file a lawsuit and have their parental rights return to them in the event that the district court found that the department violated the ADA. There is no remedy for that because of abstention doctrine. the very suspension doctrine cases would prevent that from happening, preventing a federal court from coming in and telling the state court, sorry, you have to overturn parental rights. That is not possible. So there is not a remedy for parents who have their parental rights violated at this stage. Even if the parent ran to federal court, the federal court could not turn around and tell the juvenile court, sorry, juvenile court, you're violating the ADA. You have to start complying with the ADA. That is not possible under abstention doctrines, which is why it's essential that the ADA be considered at this point, and why I say there's a right without a remedy under the Department and the Guardian Ad Litem's interpretation of the TB case. And here, the Department of Justice's position is warrants respect, and that is the Olmstead case, Olmstead v. LC 527 U.S. 581. And it says that that even under the that you don't have to give you don't have to do a full Chevron analysis to decide whether their position has to be given due deference, because they are the ones drafting the regulations here, and that they are entitled to that deference in their position of the applicability of the statute. And in the case of when a disability is known to an entity, the ADA requires that entity to provide accommodations. Whether or not they are asked for by the parent or not, when they know there's a disability, they have an obligation to provide them. Then, at that point, the parent declines to participate in the services, then their parental rights can be determined based on the fact that they didn't participate in services and still remain unfit. And I think that's the end of my time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments, all three of you for your arguments this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We will get you a written opinion in due course. That completes our docket.